Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Greetings and welcome to this iCoder podcast. I'm Ian McDuff, your host for the series, and I'm speaking with you from Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And it's fitting that I should use the name Aotearoa because this is Māori Language Week and more promotion of the Māori language and the Māori place names. That's a small aside. In this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague and fellow member of the global ODR community, Professor Pablo Cortez. Pablo is a full professor and has a chair in civil justice at Leicester Law School in the UK, where he teaches and conducts research in the field of alternative dispute resolutions, civil procedure, and consumer law. He's also an arbitrator, online arbitrator, and adjudicator for CEDA's aviation, telecommunications, and water dispute schemes. That's going to keep you busy, I imagine.
Yes.
Pablo has published three books in the field of technology and dispute resolution. Most recently, The Law of Consumer Redress in 2018. And prior to that, he edited the new regulatory framework for consumer dispute resolution in 2016. And Pablo, I have with me your first book, which I have enjoyed reading when it first came out, Online Dispute Resolution for Consumers in the EU, to which I'd like to return. He's been invited to a number of international conferences and expert meetings, including the UN Commission on International Trade Law, European Commission and European Parliament. He's a fellow of the National Centre for Technology for Dispute Resolution, and in 2012 was Gould Research Fellow at Stanford University. He's a member of the ODR Task Force for International Mediation Institute and of the ODR Advisory Group of the Civil Justice Council, which first proposed the launch of an online court in England and Wales. He's been employed as a consultant for a number of organisations, including to assist the European Commission during the drafting of legislative proposals for the ADR directive and ODR regulation. So that, I'm sure, is just a nutshell of you and your work, Pablo, but thank you for taking the time and welcome to the iCoder podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be with you here in this podcast.
Yeah, well, it's been, the podcasts have been well received, as no doubt this will be. Pablo, as I read your work and even just more recent, this CV of yours, I think there's two main areas of your work I'd like us to focus on in this conversation. One is the area of consumer dispute resolution, and specifically the use of digital technology. And the second is the use of digital technologies in reforming, transforming the institutions of justice, the courts. So if we'll see those two broad fields, we may stray beyond those, of course. My first encounter with your work was in the field of consumer protection with your book just mentioned, Online Dispute Resolution for Consumers in the EU, which came out in 2011, which I believe was based on your PhD work at the University of Cork, correct?
That's right, yes. Yeah. So that was based on the research of my PhD thesis, which really started at University of Limerick in Ireland as well, when I was doing my LLM, and I have to write my dissertation, and I decided to write on e-commerce and the regulation in the European Union, and in particular on consumer protection issues. Yeah. And I realized that consumers, when they buy something online, they have more rights than they when go to the local shop. But then obviously they have great difficulties in enforcing those rights.
Right.
And that's when I came across the concept of online dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. And that was my final chapter of my dissertation. And I was reading about SquareTrade, what they were doing on eBay. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated, and I thought it was the perfect fit for helping to deliver consumer redress and actually ensuring consumer protection and legal compliance. So that was the basis of my PhD, looking at how could we develop an online dispute resolution in the European Union, in particular to assist consumers enforcing their rights and obtaining redress. And this is an area of law that has been growing in the European Union over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And it's being harmonized in order to to facilitate the also the development of the internal European market. So was when I was completing my PhD and I published the book, also the European Union thought that it was a good idea to promote the use of these mechanisms and to assist consumers identifying ADR providers and also accessing them through online means, through technology. And the European Union decided to, well, the European Commission, which is like the executive body of the European Union, issue legislative proposals on consumer ADR and ODR. And they wanted to get some expertise on this area. And since I was doing research, they approached me, they invited me to compete for a public tender. And with two colleagues, Julia Hornell from University of London, and Fernando Esteban de la Rosa from Spain, in Granada, we worked together, working as consultants during 9 months, helping to flesh out these initial legislative proposals that they were later amended in the parliament, and they came up as legislation in 2013. And then 2 years later, the member states, or the 27 member states, they implemented in the European Union. So this legislation, what it sought is to address what was considered to be the gaps in the market for the growth of, in particular, consumer ODR. And these were that the provision of these mechanisms, it was a bit patchy. So in certain regulated sectors in particular, there was more provision for like telecommunications or financial disputes. They often offered these services, initially face-to-face, but increasingly they were accessible via online means, initially by email communications, and later through more sophisticated websites and audio platforms. But sort of this European legislation, the first aim was to ensure that all European countries or members of the European Union, they will ensure that they provide ADR services that are accessible online for all type of consumer issues. However, the participation is not mandatory for traders. So this is one of the main weak links, but this was an important first step to ensure a full coverage of ADR and ODR providers for consumer issues. So this was the first pillar of the European legislation. The second one was to ensure that all these ADR and ODR providers for consumer issues, they comply with a minimum criteria or standards. So they have to be independent and impartial. So it could not be the internal companies or traders complaint system. It has to be completely independent. They need to comply with efficiency. It cannot take more than 90 days to resolve disputes. They have to be transparent. They have to publish annual activity reports and so on. So they ensure certain minimum standards. All these consumer ADR and ODR bodies, and the final pillar, the third pillar, was making it mandatory for all businesses and traders operating in the European Union to inform consumers about these bodies once they have an unresolved dispute. So the consumer, when they have a problem, the first port of call is to complain directly with the trader, and the trader takes a few days, weeks to deal with the complaint internally. But after they resolve they decide the outcome of the dispute, if it's not in favor of the consumer, they have a legal obligation to notify the consumer about these certified ADR and ODR bodies. Now, the tricky and the weak link is that, as I said, traders are not necessarily legally obliged to participate in these processes unless the national law requires them to do so. And that is the case often in regulated sectors, like for utilities, and it also, it varies country to country. So in the last few years, I've been more looking at developments in the UK, which, as we know, obviously has left the European Union.
Yeah. I'd like to come back to that question.
But they do maintain this framework of AVR and other bodies that are certified for are publicly certified for complying with this minimum standards or criteria of independence, impartiality, effectiveness, transparency, and so on. Mm-hmm. But what is interesting is that in the UK and many other countries, the national increasingly obliges and mandates traders in sectors to be there and to pay for sometimes the cost of these ODR services. So to give you an idea, in the UK, it is mandatory or consumers can access ODR services for when they have financial disputes, also against insurance disputes. This also covers sometimes small businesses, which can also have recourse to these services. In the UK, for instance, this is provided by the Financial Ombudsman Service. Also for utilities, water, electricity, gas disputes. I presume this winter there may be more complaints as people see their bills swallowing and growing.
Yeah.
They also for telecommunications, state agents, railway disputes, universities in the UK, interestingly, and that is because under the law in the UK, students going to universities are considered to be consumers because they do pay the full cost of their degree. The government advances the money of their fees, but then they have to pay it back. So by law, they are considered to be consumers, unlike in other European countries where, and in fact, in most of the world where the governments subsidize the cost of university courses. And also, gambling services, legal services. So if you are unhappy with the bill from your lawyer, you could potentially go to the you are entitled to escalate the complaint to the legal ombudsman. By and large, these services are free of cost for the consumers. So you have this reassurance that an independent body will look at your dispute, and in most cases. In the case of the UK, the outcome of these ODR schemes are not binding on the consumer unless the consumer accepts the outcome. So this is typically in the ombudsman services as well as in adjudication schemes, where if the consumer is not happy with the outcome, could potentially go to the small claims court and take the case again, but that rarely happens because the consumer already received an independent and free outcome accessible. So it is quite unlikely that only very few cases the consumers will consider to go to courts. Although as the courts now becoming more digitally accessible, there may be maybe a growing number of these cases moving into that direction.
Yeah.
So this is a field that is moving, it is growing very quickly, in particular consumer redress, especially online access, which initially was only accessible for those who have, for those who are highly educated. It was interesting if you look at some of these statistics about who uses these services, they are mostly middle-aged men, highly educated, many even with PhDs, which is not proportionate to the society at large. But I think as these bodies are increasingly accessible online, you see a more younger population accessing these services and using them. It's also interesting how also people expect different things out of these bodies. I mean, I work for CEDAR as an independent arbitrator and adjudicator for many consumer issues. And usually older people, often they feel that they want, they have complaints about customer services, they feel strong about teaching a lesson to the company, and also that it will not happen to other people. While perhaps the younger people, the younger complainants, they seek more financial redress, you know, they pay for I don't know, they have a flight cancellation and they didn't get the money back, and they just want the money back. It's,
yeah.
It's not just about the service, it's about the financial issues. So, I mean, you see this sort of mix of expectations and you know, and requests made by the users, which is quite interesting.
There's so much going on there, Pablo. And just a couple of things to unpack. I mean, first of all, I find it as a now ex-academic, having moved out of the university system, I find it, I suppose, both not surprising and a little alarming that students are now regarded as consumers. In a way, this, they've been moving towards that over the last couple of decades, but now, as you're saying, more expressly so because of the they are buying a service. And I don't know what it's like in the UK or particularly at Leicester, where certainly through the pandemic, more and more of the classes went online. So, you know, are you getting value for money by being online? But that's a bit of a diversion. Can I go back to something that you've mentioned several times in your comments when you bracketed ADR, ODR? In the consumer services that you've looked at in the EU, are ADR and ODR seen as a similar packet? I mean, how are they being regarded? Because you've mentioned also, I'll tie this in with something you mentioned at the outset, with consumers want to enforce their rights and they're seeking redress. Now, rights is a legalistic approach. Redress is a resolution approach. So we've got a mix of processes, a mix of expectations. But can you say something about your use of the ADR stroke ODR terminology?
Yes, I think, increasingly these two concepts are blurring and they are interlinked. I think I'm partly influenced by the European legislation in the sense that they do refer to the providers as the ADR entities or bodies. So like CEDAR or the Ombudsman body, different bodies. And they certify them, and there is competent authorities, public bodies, administrative bodies that they certify the providers of these, let's call it ADR services. And these ADR services are increasingly operating online. By and large, they are now operating online. Dealing with, I don't know, if you have a complaint about a flight delay or cancellation or you know, even consumer issues. The financial ombudsman services, for instance, in the UK, they handle over 300,000 cases. And even though they allow people to go to their offices, I think it's like a dozen people a year going to their offices, and you know, 300,000 cases are operating online. Mm-hmm. And they have very flexible approaches. They take phone calls, they receive emails, they receive complaints to their websites. So, they are basically all your providers, as we often refer to. What I did not mention earlier is that the European Union also developed what they call it an audio platform, which mm-hmm. some would call it more like a clearinghouse, which function is basically to allow the consumer to send a complaint to the trader and to identify and they call it an ADR body, but operates also online. So we can call it an ADR provider that has been certified by one of the European countries so that parties could use to resolve those issues that could not be settled in advance through this European ADR so-called platform. Mm-hmm. These concepts are, when we refer to consumer ADR, often we're talking about ODR providers, increasingly so. The thing is also, the picture is very mixed in the European Union. The type of ADR methods or processes that are offered. So for instance, in Spain, the main model, it's a public arbitration scheme, which it's free of cost for consumers and traders, but it's optional for traders to join in. And they handle a significant volume of disputes, and But it also varies depending on the region in Spain, and they do provide us an optional mediation. And this mediation takes place usually via email communications. And in the Nordic countries, you have ombudsman schemes, but also they call it consumer boards. Like in Sweden, they receive complaints even when the trader has not accepted in advance to participate in the process, but they have some leverage to the issue a recommendation at the end. And if the trader does not comply with the outcome, they publish or they blacklist the trader, if you like, which increases the number of traders who comply with the recommendation. A bit similar to what in the US do the BBB sometimes.
Yep.
I heard it's particularly more controversial in the US than in the Nordic countries. But in France, they use mediation as the main system. In the UK, it's mostly ombudsman and adjudication services. So there is quite a mix of models used. And in terms of technology, well, increasingly, they have their own websites and their own case management systems. And there has been sort of also quite significant progress during the pandemic, because some of these bodies also, they have hearings, face-to-face hearings. Like I know in Spain for the arbitration systems, that this moved obviously online very quickly during the pandemic. So there has been some progress regarding to the use of technology in the last few years, and more acceptance. Well, even by the courts, not that initially they were very, very reluctant to online communications, but for civil cases, they very quickly moved to the provision of online services. So there has been quite a progress over the last few years, and this different concept of ADR and ODR are increasingly used interchangeably. So
I guess the your comment too, the pandemic has almost provided us with a natural experiment we didn't want, in that it obliged everyone to go online. In fact, almost all of the preceding people I've talked with in these podcast series have said that at some point the pandemic basically kicked the process into a new space entirely and obliged us to move online. A couple of questions again, Pablo. This is transforming the landscape of our legal thinking, because legal thinking, legal systems have typically operated within jurisdictions, and the more arcane areas of study have been conflict of laws, private international law, where people have studied choice of law, which I'll come back to in a second. Of necessity, your area of work involves cross-border work, because so many of the commercial transactions online, if you think of Amazon, eBay, et cetera, and the work you've discussed mostly has been within the EU. What is happening with those disputes which arise between a party within the EU and someone outside of it? Someone living in the EU, say in Spain, and someone in one of the Nordic countries that doesn't belong to the EU or in the US. How's that looking?
It's not looking well. to be frank, even within the European Union, there is very little use of ODR and ADR for cross-border issues. There is some, but very little. And this is something that the European Union is looking very hard to address. I mean, there are a few limited exceptions, like for instance, for aviation disputes, there is a bit more of that, which is surprising.
Yeah.
Usually the ODR providers are based in the country of the trader, where the business is located. Usually it works better when they operate using the same language. I don't know, the UK, Ireland, Austria, and Germany. But there is very little use. And of course, because we're talking by and large of low value disputes, sure. These do not, you know, they do not look closely to conflict of law issues, like, you know, the choice of law, and, you know, and let alone the choice of forum. So there is, and also many of these, most of these providers, of your providers, they do not apply strict law, you know, let alone the rules of evidence. So, you know, the adjudicators, they often, well, first of all, they often explore a consensual settlement when possible. And, you know, again, say by limited exceptions, maybe like even, you know, airline disputes where European law is very clear about, you know, when the delay exceeds certain time and it is within the control of the airline, they have to pay a fixed compensation amount, then they apply the law. But often they basically rely on principles of fairness and equity. So adjudicators do have quite a bit of flexibility. And also you have to bear in mind that many of these complaints are not necessarily legalistic complaints. It's not always about enforcing rights. Sometimes can be, but there are many issues about customer services, like, you know, the company staff was rude, they did not return calls, they gave misleading information. You know, and there are, yes, and there are some that are more, you know, it's about the enforcement of rights, like, you know, the statutory warranty. You know, I bought an iPhone that after, you know, 9 months it stopped working and the company do not want to fix it, and I still have to pay for it. So, you know, you have this sort of mix of, you know, customer services and substantive issues. But by and large, we're dealing with domestic disputes.
Right.
Now, outside the EU, there is very little, meaning that disputes between European and, you know, non-European businesses and consumers. I think in practice, what many use are chargebacks, you know, yep. That if you pay or even PayPal and other electronic payment methods, they do provide some level of redress of, you know, and compensation, but very little in terms of obviously apologies or other type of remedies. This is an area that I think they, you know, they're trying to improve it and to improve collaboration. Often operates on a voluntary basis. You know, increasingly also for consumer issues, there are the marketplaces like Amazon and eBay who provide their own, you know, sort of independent resolution between the users, the sellers and the buyers. Actually, recently through Cedar, which I'm an adjudicator for them, I dealt with an Amazon dispute. Under European law, now on online marketplaces, they do have to provide mediation to when they have a complaint with their users, with their business users. So in the case I was dealt with was about a Spanish company who was kicked out of Amazon because they said they were breaching their trade law. They were selling the copyright and trademark rules. They were selling face masks and t-shirts with the Volkswagen logo.
Yep.
And you know, it was an issue. They said that they have what was not actually the logo, was the logo of the iconic Volkswagen van, and was like a drawing. Mm-hmm. And they have that drawing registered in Spain, but there was an issue whether they were breaking the rules or not. So what we do in this process, we look at the complaint, the response, we try to figure out what actually happened, and then we write a recommendation. And that recommendation is up to Amazon to, they can implement it or not. They often do. That recommendation is given to both parties. So, you know, increasingly there is an effort to provide for these independent audio services and, you know, even outside also the marketplaces. So, in terms of cross-border, frankly, there is very there has not been much progress. And
because I'd wondered, when I first came across the EU directive, my understanding was that it was in part designed to deal with the fact that so much of the high volume, low value trade that you were talking about a couple of minutes ago does take place cross-border. Now, your suggestion is that much of this is domestic, both domestic to the EU and more particularly domestic to the member states. So much of the ODR stuff is happening within Spain or within Italy, excuse me, or within whatever country. But just on an aside, in relation to a comment you made a few minutes ago, now that the UK has left the EU, has that changed anything by way of the UK's participation in the schemes that it was part of before?
Yes. Well, it has. But when the UK left the European Union, they also left their collaboration and participation in the European ODR platform. Mm-hmm. I think actually UK consumers were one of the highest users of the European platform, which is more helpful to, you know, especially not only to identify the local, but also, you know, also at cross-border. So you have, anecdotally, I have, for instance, a complaint in Spain I over a car rental that was, when I returned it, they said that I had made the scratches, and then I said that those scratches were already there, were very barely visible. Mm-hmm. And I went through an arbitration process in Spain online, mostly via email communications. And then the decision eventually came in my favor, but the company did not enforce it. And, you know, I didn't know what to do to enforce the complaint. So I went to the European audio platform and identified the, you know, basically the contact information that of the arbitration body that will help me to make the complaint and to then to enforce it. But in terms of the UK, when they left, besides leaving the European platform, the legislation has not changed much. In fact, they are currently enhancing it, but again, to deal mostly with domestic issues. As I said before, there was already very limited cross-border use. So for instance, I mean, it's a bit technical, it does not have very practical significance. Before the UK needed to notify those ADR and ODR bodies that had been certified into the European Union, they do not that any longer. Now this is done and has to be reported at a domestic level. But also, you know, the UK is taking the opportunity to revise the legislation, not only to adjust it as a result of Brexit, but also to improve it. And they are now they are planning to make it mandatory the certification of those ADR and ODR bodies that deal with consumer issues. And they are looking at also enhancing the standards and, you know, the quality criteria for the certification process. And also they're looking at expanding the sectors that is mandatory for businesses to provide ODR services. For instance, an important one is the vehicle industry, not just the sale of new cars, but also secondhand cars. There's a huge volume of disputes, mm-hmm. as well as repairs, car repairs. You know, these are issues that it's better to reform to deal with informally or through ODR processes than going to a more formal court process. And also they are looking at house improvements to make it mandatory for businesses and traders to participate, to offer their consumers an ODR service. So there is some changes are happening in the UK as a result of Brexit. And actually the UK is now considering joining the Singapore Convention that the EU opted out. The UK said, well, this is our opportunity to to highlight and try to maintain our dispute resolution hub.
Perhaps a couple of final questions on this area, and picking up on your comments as well. One of the things that we've discussed in earlier podcasts when we're dealing with the use of digital tools for access to justice is in the word access. And because all of this development you're talking about requires access to digital technology, have there been obstacles that have had to be addressed by the EU to ensure more or less equality or at least equity in terms of access to the technology, access to resources?
I don't think there has been major progress beyond the use of the audio platform. And now what they did is also created a new, I mean, they tried to empower consumers by providing information about how to identify this platform. So for instance, it is mandatory for all online businesses to put a link to the European platform, and that is in order to inform consumers about, you know, where to go if they have issues. But in terms of access per se, there has been that is being left mostly to the member states to provide resources. And for instance, there is the European Consumer Centers in the European Union that do provide support, especially in terms of legal advice via online via mostly email and online communications, but not so much in terms of access to the actual technology. So there is not much progress on that front. In the UK, I think the most important development in recent times, that they're still working on it, it's the Master of the Rolls, which is the second most senior judge in the country, in charge on the civil issues. He said that they are developing what he calls the digital funnel, which is basically a website that intends to signpost people to this audio and ADR services in advance of going to court, but also going to court. Sometimes they do have to go to sort of pre-action requirements. So basically to go, sometimes they have online portals for certain type of issues like personal injury claims. And there has been significant development on this front as well. I'm a bit diverting to the question, but this is an interesting development that is happening here, which is, for instance, the so-called Whiplash portal. So for claims under £5,000, where parties don't have legal representation, they have to go, in order to take a claim to court, they have to use this online portal first, where they make the complaint that is passed to the insurance company or the other party. This is for traffic accidents, where for minor injuries like a whiplash or minor bruises.
Yeah.
And interestingly, this website also links the parties to independent approved medical providers who can issue an independent report about, you know, the extent of the injuries. But the most fascinating part, I find that if there is a disagreement on a specific issue, like liability, you know, who is responsible, they can pass that question to the judge. The judge decides on the liability issue, and then they send back the case to the platform, to the portal, for the parties to reach a settlement, like a financial settlement. Now, and with this a little bit, there has been issues about how easy is to use this platform by the users, because they don't have legal representation. They apparently, many find it difficult to access it. So there is definitely room for improving the accessibility for users, let alone for vulnerable users, you know.
Sure.
So there is still a lot of work to be done. Although, on a positive note, as you know, as younger people become older, they are usually more comfortable with the use of technology. So you know, hopefully this is something that it will improve over time.
Now what you've done is very nicely led us from the first field of your work in the consumer work into the next area, which is the access to the courts, and particularly because of your role with the ODR Advisory Council and the Civil Justice Advisory Group on the Civil Justice Council. You've been very closely involved with the work, really spearheaded by the Master of the Rolls, who's a very keen supporter of these developments. Can you give us a snapshot of what's happening in the UK on the move towards digital access, and particularly the digitization of the courts, which for some of my legal and judicial colleagues here will be absolutely terrifying? But the idea that the courts, as our friend and colleague Richard Susskind has said, that the courts really are a service rather than a location. Where are you and your colleagues on the advisory group up to in this process of digitizing the courts?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Richard Susskind convened this initial group in, I think it was 2015. And we started by looking at, you know, developments elsewhere, examples of successful ODR providers. And, you know, one of the main ones is the one in British Columbia, yep. The Civil Resolution Tribunal. And you know, we thought that it would be great to replicate something similar in the UK, and came up with a proposal for the Her Majesty's Online Court, which then Lord Justice Briggs, which is now yeah. Supreme Court Justice, he was tasked to make a major report about the civil structure of the courts and see for ways of improvement. And his major recommendation was to launch what he called the Online Solutions Court. So, you know, in order to facilitate access to justice, especially for claims under £25,000, so the major bulk of civil claims going to the courts, to the county courts, was to provide online access, but also, you know, to promote early settlements when possible. As we know, especially in common law jurisdictions, most defended claims end up in a settlement. So how to facilitate that and how to do it online? So he made this proposal, and then this became a reality when the government committed a significant investment, which is now, I think, is around £1.4 billion to digitalize and modernize the courts. It seemed like a major investment. This is over a period of, it's now like 6 years, I think. And interestingly, some of this money is being raised by the selling of unused or underused court estate. So some of the courthouses that are not being used as often as they used to, especially in the provinces, they are selling the buildings and they are recouping that money that are investing in the use of technology. And there are many different projects. I mean, the overall aim is to ensure that all courts and tribunals operate digitally by default. And this is a major mammoth task, and there are different projects going in different courts and tribunals operating in parallel. One that is an important one that I've been following closely, it is the online civil money claim, which is based on the idea of Briggs' proposal and also the Susskind's report and even the Civil Resolution Tribunal, which is basically the small claims court moving online. And it is dealing currently with claims under £10,000. And this now offers a telephone mediation service for the users. Well, first of all, you can make a complaint online. Now the defendant is able to make, without prejudice, basically a confidential offer to settle to the other party, which is not disclosed to the judge. And if parties do not settle at that stage, then they move to the telephone mediation. which up until recently was optional to the parties. This telephone mediation consists of a civil servant who's been trained on mediation, who calls the parties separately and explores, and asks them whether they can reach a settlement in advance of setting the case for trial. The trial that by and large is still operating face to face, but is moving online. Going back to this second stage of the telephone mediation, which was optional, it moved to an opt-out model, meaning that parties are automatically sent to the mediation unless they ask not to go explicitly. And now the government only in July issued a consultation to make this stage mandatory. So meaning that the parties must participate in the telephone mediation. That they say that it could benefit to around, the government calculates that it will be offered to around 270,000 users a year. So it could be a significant amount of people who will be required to use this service in advance of going to the trial, to the final stage, to the hearing with the judge. This hearing, also an important development in England, is that, which is currently operating on a pilot basis, judges can decide cases without a hearing based only on the documents. This is, by the way, how most consumer ADR and audio services operate, is without a hearing. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's with documents only. And then the judge may require to have a hearing, which currently by default is face-to-face, but in the near future, by next year, I believe, the expectation is will be, online when possible. And then the case, is resolved. Now the master of the roles is saying that they want to keep offering this online mediation, not just at a fixed point, but more continuously, especially when at different stages, when parties exchange the evidence, they said that there will be bots who will make suggestions of settlements. So they want to incorporate technology and to keep pushing for settlements when possible. But again, in other sectors, like for filing a divorce, it also has moved online. Tribunals are also increasingly operating online. In the UK and England, the most well-known one is the Traffic Penalty Tribunal. So these are for parking fines, typically that put by local authorities. The driver, disputes the fine, it can first, appeal the fine directly to the local authority. If it's not happy, then can go to the tribunal. The tribunal that operates online. We're talking fines that are around, £80. £100 US dollars. So, the system operates completely online. There is not a mediation stage in this process. It's yeah. just direct adjudication. But, there is significant progress on this front.
Is there any thought to parallel the work, for example, with eBay, that some of this could be, in fact, you've already suggested some of it is AI assisted with bots somewhere in the process suggesting solutions. Is some of your work with the advisory group looking at the degree to which some parts of the process you've outlined can be automated?
The idea is, absolutely, to incorporate these features and in the process. So I think the master of the roles put the example when an expert report is published to make a suggestion about a settlement based on that outcome. Or when the evidence is exchanged between the parties, there is I'm not aware of anything being already in place. I think a model to follow, an inspiring model, is the one, the Solution Explorer that they have in British Columbia in Canada, and they want to incorporate that And I think, for instance, there could be room to do it for cases like aviation disputes, where there are fixed amount of settlements in the legislation that have to be compensated to the passengers in case of cancellations and delays. So the idea is that these settlements are automatically generated by the software, by these bots, but they are not yet operating on in the core services that I'm aware of here in the UK. I think there is, I believe some consumer aviation bodies are starting to use it, especially again for this aviation type of disputes, because there are fixed amount of settlements. So there is, it's easier to embed these settlement proposals. Yes, there is absolutely room for improvement on that front. And I think, yeah, the solution explorer is seen as a model to follow.
Yeah, I hope to talk to Shannon if we can she's now moved away from the British Columbia model to a more senior role, but I hope to talk to her later. We're going to need to wrap up in a couple of minutes, Pablo, but I have one more question with which to finish, and it's a tricky one. If you put your crystal ball gazing eyes on, imagine what the future's like. What will a court look like in 10 years' time?
Well, I think they will be certainly more accessible online. And I think they will be increasingly more interlinked with AVR services, especially with mediation and even early neutral evaluation. There will be more variety of AVR processes embedded into the core service. I think we're going to see less involvement of the third neutral party, the judge, mm-hmm. And more involvement of the fourth party, you know, the technology. Yep. So it will be more automated processes. I think there will be more online triage or self-diagnosis in the initial stages. I think there will be a more fluid relationship between courts and AVR providers, probably certified AVR and OVR providers. I would expect also a higher number of users, benefiting from these services. And I would expect less trials, especially for low value issues. I would also expect that certain type of cases, in particular consumer issues, will be pushed out of the courts to independent and certified providers. And then perhaps, you know, leave the door open for the rare appeals that they move on to the courts. And obviously, as you suggested, I would expect a greater use of artificial intelligence in all these services, especially towards pushing and helping parties to reach settlements and to inform them on settlements. I would expect especially for low value issues to be less legal advice, the traditional legal advice of a lawyer, and benefiting for easier access to online information. I suspect we'll be moving into that direction over the next few years.
Wonderful. That's an extraordinary vision. I mean, one thing I think I can be confident of, given your preceding comments, is that you will be part of that. You'll be right there.
It will be a privilege to contribute to this discussion and this research. I think we're going to see also certainly more empirical research, because so far the gathering of information by the courts in particular has been very poor, but with the digitalization, we'll be able to monitor much better the pain points and to identify how could we best address them. And I think, researchers, we could contribute to that analysis, I hope.
Yeah, fabulous. Pablo, on that sort of optimistic and I think very practical note, we should wrap up. Thank you so much for taking the time. I've been fascinated, and I know of some of your work, but it's just wonderful to hear more of your work, both within and across the EU and outside of it. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Ian. And looking forward to meeting again and keep listening to your podcast. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, and farewell.
This podcast has been brought to you by ICODER, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about ICODER or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.